taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. You know, the title of today's message is Making the Sausage. There's a saying that goes around. Nobody wants to know how the sausage is made. We love, I don't know about you, but I personally love eating sausage. It's probably not the best thing I should eat, but it does taste really, really good. But most people don't know, don't care, and really don't want to know what actually goes into making sausage. And that's been applied to making, to writing laws, to legislating. We want the legislation. We just don't want to know what actually goes inside the legislation. Or as one famous politician once said, we have to pass the bill to find out what's in the bill. Well, that is truly a problem. In fact, on a recent tour, I'm asked this occasionally, you know, would I consider running for Congress? And my answer is generally no. Well, first of all, my answer is I don't want to run for Congress. That to me is a certain level of hell to have to put up with the, you know, the nonsense. I have a very low threshold of stupid and game playing. I'm not going to campaign. I'm not going to beg people for their votes. I'm not going to buy votes. If people want me, they're going to have to draft me. They're going to have to vote for me without me begging for those votes. My platform is very simple. It's the Constitution of the United States. If the entire bill is not authorized, is not exercising a power delegated to the United States by the Constitution, my vote is no. And that's where I want to get into today, because we're finding out more and more what happens when we let people, let's say, vote for the bill, figuring we'll find out later what's actually in the bill. So one story I have here, I found in the Epoch Times. Senator Schumer is looking to add a microchip bill into the NDAA. Now, what is this microchip bill? What is the NDAA? What does it have to do? And what does it have to do with making sausage? Well, the idea is there have been several governors and other politicians who've been pushing the federal government saying, we have a problem. We can't get the microchips we need to make our products, biggest one being automobiles. So the governors have been saying, Congress, you need to do something to help incent people to build microchip manufacturing facilities in the United States. Okay, let's start with the basic understanding. The reason microchips are not made in the United States is because the governments of the United States, including Congress, have made it difficult and expensive to both make these manufacturing facilities and operate these manufacturing facilities. These companies do not ship these microchips from Taiwan and China and South Korea because they like having businesses over there. It's because it's actually cheaper to have them manufactured over there and then shipped over here than it is to actually build them here. Now, that comes in a large part, not entirely, but in large part due to, well, federal regulations, state regulations. So you're basically saying, listen, Congress, you helped make this mess. Rather than fixing it, how about you just add more mess to it? In other words, we've dug ourselves a hole. Congress, get a bigger shovel. Start digging some more. Take money from the American people. Give it to businesses so that they will build these microchip facilities in the United States. So they go to Schumer. And again, this is true of almost every politician, almost every congressman. This is, hey, look at what I can do. I can bribe the American people by saying, look, I'm protecting you. I'm bringing back manufacturing to the United States by taking money I'm not authorized to take from you to spend on something I'm not authorized to spend. But look, it's a good thing. Go ahead and do it. That's what this whole process is about. That's the making of the sausage. It's the reason why it's called pork barrel. You know, pork barrel is when a legislator puts something in a bill to bring make the sausage a little tastier for his constituent, shall we say. That's what's happening here. Now, why is it going in the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act? Well, you see, this gets into the politics side of it. And I don't mean political parties. I mean the sausage of how legislation is made. Now, you may remember that according to the Constitution, the Army cannot be funded for more than 2 years. Specifically, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 12, which reads, to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. So we need to refund the Army every 2 years. And they tend to refund the military because they've tied all the military people together under the Department of Defense. But the Constitution says, listen, we can raise armies, but to fund them, you can only have appropriation bills no longer than 2 years. So every 2 years, we have this National Defense Authorization Act. And this is the porculous bill into which we put all the funding for all of the military. It's considered must-pass legislation. It is considered everything short of treason to vote against the NDAA. It has to pass. If you don't vote for the NDAA, don't you support our military? Don't you want to fund the military? Don't you want to protect Americans? Voting against the NDAA is roughly the legislative equivalent of what's referred to as the third rail. You know, I grew up in New York City. I've been on the subway many times. You've got the regular two rails, and then you got the third rail with all the electricity in it. You don't want to touch that one because, well, you die. Well, that's what the NDAA has become. We used to refer to Social Security as the third rail of American politics. It's not quite what it used so much, but the NDAA is considered so much a must-pass that congressmen, senators, and representatives have figured out they can stick nasty bits of legislation, in fact, often unconstitutional, unpopular, and downright terrible legislation, in the NDAA, they can get it passed. Which is exactly why I believe Senator Schumer wants to put a microchip bill in the NDAA. Because if he came to the American people and said, listen, we're going to take your tax money to give to these corporations to build chip manufacturing, well, the American people would say, oh, no. And he'd get slapped and everybody gets slapped. Because, of course, you know, he represents New York, which means if these facilities are going to be placed somewhere other than New York, well, then he's going to get beat up by his constituents. Why didn't you bring it to New York? And it's, why do that when under the cover of the NDAA, we can just slip this in nice and quiet and let all this happen? See, this is the biggest problem. This is the reason why most people don't want me in Congress, because I look at the NDAA and say, if there's a microchip bill in it, I'm voting no. Because the entire bill is not authorized by the Constitution. Which is why we used to have bills that were simple, one-page bills. Now we have these multi-thousand-page bills with all this junk in it, because that isn't how Congress has figured out. They can sneak all their little goodies in there, and most of the American people are ignorant and apathetic. They don't know, they don't care, and those that do care, they can beat up by saying, well, how could you not support the military, or how could you not support something so important? The fact that you've got what we used to call a poison pill in there, an amendment that is designed to kill the entire legislation, they get away with it. Now ask yourself, would you vote for a congressman, for a representative or a senator that voted against the NDAA because it had unconstitutional provisions in it? Would you really? How many of your neighbors would? How many of your neighbors would require that a bill in Congress be specific to a single piece of law? You want to fund the NDAA? Nothing goes in the NDAA but funding the defense. Funding the military. That's it. Period. End of story. Anything else? Dead on arrival. See, if we did that, I believe a couple interesting things would happen. Yes, there would be more legislation out there, but it'd also be easier to deal with. You see, you wouldn't have a representative or a senator voting on a bill. There's no way that they or even their staff have read, because it's 2,000-3,000 pages long, and they've only had it for 2 hours before the vote. So maybe your representatives, the people you invest with your, you delegate your power to represent you, maybe they'd actually know what the heck they're voting for, rather than just listening to whatever their political leadership or their donor class, their supporters, the special interest groups want them to do. So we'd have more legislation, but you'd actually be able to deal with the legislation, and you'd be able to deal with the individual issues in the legislation. In other words, you wouldn't be arguing microchip funding, microchip subsidies in a defense authorization bill. Now, there have been plenty of examples just recently of this. You ever remember Biden's Build Back Better plan? The abuse of the federal government plan? Well, how many of you realize that AOC's U.S. Civilian Climate Corps was snuck into that legislation? Yep. So now there's going to be a federal program to hire people to promote this, they call it the Green New Deal. At least that's what AOC's been calling it. But to promote a hoax. See, what most people refer to as climate change is a hoax. I can prove it. See, go all the way back to 1972. I read this in the New York Post. It was interesting. In 1972, we were told that we have 10 years to stop the catastrophe. That was 50 years ago. In 1982, headlines, an environmental catastrophe as irreversible as any nuclear bomb. That one came out of the New York Times. 1989, global disaster, nations wiped off the face of the earth and crop failures. They said we had until 1999 to figure that one out. 1990, where are we here? Oh, head of the UN. Said, we shall win or lose the climate struggle in the first years of the 1990s. It keeps going. 2007, head of the UN climate panel. What we do in the next 2 or 3 years will determine our future. If there is no action before 2012, that's too late. A report from the UN General Assembly. Only 11 years left to prevent irreversible damage from climate change. See, it seems like about every few years we've got 10 years to live, and it's been going on for 50 years. Now, we have a story. We love our little stories and fairy tales and little things to help teach our children lessons. So let me, I don't mean to treat you like a child, but there are people out there that I think need this little lesson. See, there's a story called The Boy Who Cried Wolf. The story goes something like this. There was a small town, and there was one young boy whose job it was out to go out and guard the sheep overnight. And he got bored. So he thought it'd be funny, and he cried, "Wolf! Wolf!" And of course, all the townsfolk came out. They came running with their pitchforks and their torches, only to find there was no wolf. Frustrated and angry, they went back to bed. Next night, middle of the night, young boy's bored. Guess what? He cries, "Wolf! Wolf! There is no wolf." This goes on and on and on till one day, a wolf shows up. A real wolf, an actual wolf, shows up. The boy cries, "Wolf! Wolf!" But you know what? Nobody believed him anymore. None of the townsfolks believed him anymore. So guess who got eaten by the wolf? So let me ask you, if newspapers and politicians and the UN for 50 years have been crying, "Wolf, wolf, we're all going to die," and none of their predictions have come true, when do we stop listening to them? What? I've got 72, 82, 89, 90, 2007, 2011. There's six right there. When do we stop listening to these idiots? Well, apparently we don't, because now we have placed a civilian climate corps in the Build Back Better plan. The federal government is going to create 300,000 jobs. Now, stop for just a second here. So we're going to have 300,000 jobs to combat a climate crisis that doesn't exist. That's been nothing but a lie. It's been a lie since 1972. I'm old enough to remember when they said, oh, we're all going to freeze to death. There's going to be a new ice age. So that never happened. I'm old enough to remember they said New York City would be underwater by the year 2000. And then it was 2010. Then it was 2020. New York City's still there. Battery Park is still there. But we're going to get 300,000 jobs. Now, I have no idea what they plan to pay per job. But I know, because this is a federal government, the cost to the American taxpayer will be at least three times what the salary of those jobs are. It's just history. You look at it. If that is a $100,000 job, it's going to cost the American people at least $300,000 in taxes to pay somebody $100,000. The people who analyze the way government spends money, they look at it and say, yeah, on average, well, at least in welfare programs, only about 30% of the tax dollar actually gets to the person in need. I have no reason not to believe that that wouldn't be the same for the climate crisis, these climate stormtroopers. These are the climate Gestapo. I mean, what are these people actually going to do? Interesting question. What are they actually going to do? Well, according to the White House Twitter account, the official White House Twitter account, quote, this workforce will conserve public lands, bolster community resilience, address the changing climate, and put good-paying union jobs within reach for more people. How? How's this workforce going to conserve public land? Are they going to go out there and I don't know, do what? Bully, intimidate people into handing over their land to government to be conserved for them? To make it public land for them? Will these be the bullies when the government simply says, you know what, that is a protected waterway. I don't care if it's a stock pond or just a big rain puddle. It's now considered waterways of the United States, so it's now public land to come. Is that what they're going to do? Are these going to be people enforcing that? What are these people actually going to do? I have a feeling, my theory is, as I said, they're going to be the climate Gestapo. They're going to be people going around finding out every little nitpicky thing that they don't think is the best for the environment, that's best for climate. And then they're going to, turn you into the federal government? Issue a citation, write you a ticket, issue a fine? Yeah, the best way I can understand this is, this is the climate Gestapo. Now, here's the interesting part. So we have 50 years of proof that climate change is not nearly the disaster or emergency we've been told. Not even close. You know, they said, oh, it's good, you know, the seas are going to rise a foot by 2020, and they've risen an inch, a centimeter. But here's proof that this has nothing to do with controlling climate. This is all about controlling you. See, just the other week, they had a UN climate conference. And here's the interesting thing. So this COP26, which was the climate, it's a two-week conference. And their quote-unquote carbon footprint is projected to be twice the one held in 2019. Yeah, it's projected to be 102,500 metric tons of carbon dioxide emissions. Why? where you have all these people saying we have to stop using carbon, we have to get off of fossil fuels, we have to, taking their private airplanes, and in many cases, was it large contingents of vehicles, right, gasoline-burning cars, to go around to this conference. See, now, if these people believed that aircraft were really dangerous to the environment, why are they flying in private airplanes? If they believed that vehicles are, you know, gas-powered vehicles, diesel-powered vehicles are truly disastrous, why do they use them? In other words, if President Obama truly believed that we were in a climate catastrophe, why would he spend, what, $11 plus million for oceanfront property? Better yet, why would any insurance company cover oceanfront property if they truly believed that sea levels were rising and that Martha's Vineyard was going to end up underwater? See, the answer is they don't believe it. They talk a good game, but they don't believe it because they don't act that way. I will begin to consider that climate change is a serious problem when the people promoting it act that way. Then maybe I'll consider the possibility that there's something to this. But when each and every one of your models has proven to be absolutely false, wrong, awfully wrong. There's a story about a football player who got turned around and scored on the wrong end zone. That's what these people are doing. They keep telling us, this is the proof that climate change is going to kill us all. And then when they run the models and they actually compare them to real life, it proves no such thing. It proves that even if climate change is a significant problem, we've got thousands of years to figure it out. Now, again, I'm not into pollution. I live in this environment. I'm more than happy to discuss alternative sources of energy. The only problem is fossil fuels are the cheapest, densest form of energy we have available. Nuclear would be great, but they do everything they can to shut down nuclear plants. And there are we think of nuclear as a monolithic. There are actually different types of nuclear reaction, many of which are much safer and produce much less waste. But you see, federal government said, no, we're in charge of nuclear energy and we don't want these types of energy platforms put in place. See, that's what tells me these people are not serious. If they were truly serious, they truly believed that we were running out of oil, which we're not. If they truly believed that fossil fuels was destroying the environment, well, they'd be looking to things like nuclear. Now, I'm not going to read into other people's hearts why they do what they do, but when I look into their actions and say, no, they don't believe it. They talk about it. They don't believe it because they don't act that way. But you see, now we have a U.S. civilian climate corps that got snuck into a ginormous piece of legislation because we, the American people, don't pay attention to how the sausage is made. And the people we hire to pay attention to how the sausage is made, they're not interested. They're only interested in what they can get out of the sausage, or more accurately, what they can put into the sausage that benefits them. So I come back to the basic question. If your House rep, if your senator voted against the Build Back Better framework, would you support them? More importantly, if they vote against the NDAA because it's loaded with non-relevant and in many cases illegal and unconstitutional legislation, if they voted against that, would you support them? So I keep telling you, last week when I was in Tampa, a gentleman stood up who's running for Congress. And based on his positions, I said, you're going to get pilloried. You're going to be lied about, defamed, slandered. Your family's going to be dragged through the mud. He goes, I know. I'm prepared for it. His family was prepared for it. I hope he is. Again, I've only met the man once, but I hope he is prepared. And sir, if you are listening to this program, please contact me. Let's do a follow-up. But the question I asked the crowd that day is, if that man stands for what the Constitution says, will they support him while he's being lied about? Will they support his family while they're being dragged through the mud? Will they support that position when it's unpopular in the media or even unpopular on the street corner? Because let's face it, most Americans, you tell them that somebody voted against the NDAA, you're going to tell them they voted against our military. And probably the military's of all of our institutions has some of the highest support in this country. Never paying attention to, oh, by the way, yeah, they didn't support, it's not that they didn't support the military. They didn't support using the military as pork mules, as an opportunity to bring in illegal and unconstitutional legislation and get it across the finish line by hiding it in the NDAA. Now, I'm sure many of you right now are going, yeah, those dirty, rotten scoundrel politicians, it's all their fault, except they work for you. Everything they do in your name and with your authority. Every time your representative votes, they're voting in your name. Tell me, can you hold your head up knowing how your representative votes, how your senator votes? Can you hold your head high and proudly state, I support what they do? And if not, why do we keep hiring them? Could it be that the American people have become so bribed by the federal government, they don't care about the sausage anymore? You can put anything you want in that sausage. Just give me that tasty little bite this morning. Make sure I have it with my eggs and my muffins and bagels and whatnot. We don't care anymore. And if we don't care what our representatives in Congress are doing, if we allow ignorance, recklessness, and corruption, if we tolerate that, we cannot blame them for being ignorant, reckless, and corrupt. The blame rests on us. Now, before I head off to break, a couple things to check out, please. Please head to constitutionstudy.com. You'll find out everything I'm doing in the Constitution Study, articles, videos, podcasts. Everything is there. Sign up for the newsletter. Ask a question. I'm actually building a Q&A episode. I want to build at least part of an episode, if not an entire episode, based on answering your questions. So just go to constitutionstudy.com, go to ask a question. Just mark it that you want to hear it on the radio, and I'll do that. Also, please head to healthycell.com. You know, vitamins haven't really changed since the 1930s. Now, if you're looking for some better sleep, more focus, more energy, or just a healthier lifestyle, Healthy Cell is a leading innovator in nutritional supplements for health at the cellular level. Now, I don't know about you, but I get to the end of the day, and well, sometimes I'm a little fuzzy-headed. I'm having a hard time focusing. I'm having a hard time doing the deep thinking, the deep work that this job requires. So try Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall. It'll boost your short-term focus and your long-term brain power. And it's a simple, easy-to-take supplement. Just mix it in some food or drink, or just take it straight. And as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud or use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. Try any of their products. Sign up for a subscription. But try healthycell.com/outloud to get 20% off that very first order.
I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. If you go to healthycell.com, you can check out the technology, the products of Healthy Cell. These are very innovative products. They are a form of bio-nutraceuticals that are bioactive, and they come in a variety of categories. One is daily essentials, which are the bioactive multi and the vegan essentials. And then the next category is performance. And this is the REM sleep supplement. I've talked about it a lot. I think it's very effective, and I recommend it for myself for my family, but as well as my patients. I'm having great luck with this because it is such a terrific product with a blend of, I think, is what's needed for not only promoting sleep, but also getting quality sleep. And when gets quality sleep, then there's restfulness, and the next day is better, and then the next night is better, and it becomes a progressively positive cycle for the human body. And the next product in the performance category is Focus and Recall. Focus and Recall. And I think that is the featured product that is coming into play for those with long COVID and brain fog that develops after COVID-19, the respiratory infection, but also after COVID-19 vaccination. And then finally, the main horse in Healthy Cell is the targeted support of immune super boost. And what we have here is a series of products that really can toe the line for patients who are working their way through the COVID-19 pandemic, either at risk for COVID-19, have had COVID-19 and recovered, are in the post-COVID syndrome, which is now a diagnosis we put in the electronic medical record, and are suffering through a variety of manifestations of post-COVID syndrome. And then lastly, those who are in the throes of vaccine reactions of some sort, whether they be acute serious vaccine reactions or the more common mild prolonged vaccine reactions. We now know the spike protein lasts in the human body after the respiratory infection or after vaccination for up to 15 months. We had this breaking development brought to you on America Out Loud Talk Radio with Dr. Bruce Patterson on a recent episode. So we know this is the case. And so we know if the Wuhan spike protein is in the human body for up to 15 months, it's going to cause damage. It's going to cause inflammation. It's going to set a whole variety of immune responses up, working against our body and potentially damaging cells, tissues, intercellular communication systems, and very importantly, influencing organ function. And here is where we need the maximum defense for the body, the maximum and the most appropriate blend of micronutrients, minerals, as well as vitamins to help the body get through this difficult time. So go to healthycell.com and check out the products, and in the promotional code, use the term out loud for 20% off your first purchase. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. Thank you for coming back here to the Constitution Study. You know, it takes a little bit of reading, it takes a little bit of study, but you too can be a student of the Constitution, a scholar of the Constitution, and recognize when the sausage has got some, let's say, unsavory stuff in it. For example, I found this article from the Epoch Times where Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby told reporters that Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, quote, has the authorities he needs to require this vaccine across the forces, including the National Guard. Kirby later added that during a news briefing that it is a lawful order for National Guardsmen to receive the COVID vaccine. Okay, let's back up just a little bit. The National Guard are not under the authority of the United States until they are called forth by Congress. I had this discussion with somebody the other day. The president is not the person who calls up the National Guard. It's Congress that has the power to call up the National Guard. So Congress is given the power to provide for the calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, and repel invasion. Congress that has the power to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. So, no, Mr. Kirby, it is not, first of all, it's not a lawful order. Why? Because that order violates the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. It also violates federal law. You see, these are all of the current quote-unquote vaccines, the biologics that are available in the U.S., are experimental. They're issued under an emergency use authorization. All the news about Pfizer being authorized, it was a version of the Pfizer vaccine not currently available within the United States. So this is an emergency use authorization. The law creating the power to create emergency use authorization says that you must be informed of your right to refuse. federal law. Now, I'm not familiar with this statute, but as I understand it, under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, you cannot be required to take a experimental drug, a drug issued under an emergency use authorization as a condition of service in the military. So no, sir, this is not a legal order. Therefore, the troops aren't required to follow it. They're only required to follow lawful orders. If it's not a lawful order, they don't have to follow it. But furthermore, it's also unlawful because until they are called into the service of the United States, the laws of the United States have no, the governing of the militia is handled by the states, not by the United States. That's right. The National Guard, until they're called into service, work for the states, not the United States. So no, it is not a lawful order. It is not even a lawful jurisdiction to issue that order. But again, since most people pay no attention to the sausage, they don't realize this. Now, since we're talking about vaccines, this is an interesting story. I don't know if you've seen it, but I've been pleased to see that at least one judge, the Circuit Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, has issued a stay on the implementation of OSHA's regulations requiring private businesses implement a mask mandate. I'm sorry, a vaccine mandate. Now, looking at the opinion, a couple of very interesting things popped up. First of all, just for background, a group of individuals, businesses, and even states petitioned for a stay. They did an emergency stay. The Fifth Circuit did an emergency stay. They then reviewed the facts, and having conducted what they refer to as an expedited review, they affirmed their initial stay. In other words, they're saying, listen, this is not legit. This can't go forward. Now, I want to read a little bit from the opinion. Let's see. Okay. The Constitution vests a limited legislative power in Congress. For more than a century, Congress has routinely used this power to delegate policymaking specifics and technical details to executive agencies charged with effectuating policy principles Congress lays down. In the mine run of cases, a transportation department regulating trucking on an interstate highway or an aviation agency regulating an airplane lavatory, this is generally well and good. But health agencies do not make housing policy, and occupational safety administrations do not make health policy. In seeking to do so here, OSHA runs afoul of the statute from which it draws its power and likely violates the constitutional structure and that safeguards our collective liberty. So here's point number one. Okay, first of all, the court says, listen, OSHA is not a health policy agency. Therefore, it was illegal. They violated the law that created them when they created a health policy that they're not authorized to. But you see, then we run into a very interesting situation. So the states, the civilians, the businesses have, they've petitioned the government for redress grievance. The court says, listen, no, this is not right. They issue a stay. They're basically the court saying, you're not allowed to implement this to OSHA. But then you have the president encouraging people to, or telling these businesses, even though OSHA, which has now suspended the implementation of their ETS, the emergency temporary statute or whatever they call it, OSHA says, okay, the court said we're not allowed to do this, so they suspend it. But you have the president saying, we know it's been suspended. We know the court said no, but they're still encouraging businesses to go do this. Now, on the one hand, you look at it and saying, that's very much the act of a tyrant. I've heard a lot of people refer to it that way. But remember, the president is not subservient to the judiciary. The president is not subservient. In fact, the infamous case Marbury versus Madison pointed out that the court did not have the legal authority to order then Secretary of State James Madison to sign and issue the commissions for Mr. Marbury. because the court didn't have the legal authority to order the president or his administration because they are not subservient to them. So the fact that the president is still saying, listen, you know, okay, we can't put this down, but we still recommend you do that, I'm not surprised. I mean, let's face it, there's plenty of tyrannical actions out of this administration. One more should not be a surprise to anyone. Even the fact that the court said that the mandate was staggeringly overbroad, okay, they don't care. To keep telling you, this is not about medical. This is not a health decision. This is not a medical decision. This is a political decision. This is a control decision. So I'm not surprised to have the president continue to recommend this. But there was one little piece that I didn't hear too much about. And this should also concern you, especially dealing with something we dealt with in the first half of the episode. You see, the Occupational and Health and Safety, or Safety and Health Administration, only has about 2,000 quote-unquote enforcers, men and women whose job it is to enforce their regulations. Now, there's estimated to be 7 million businesses employing over 84 million workers that would be impacted by this mandate. So let me ask you, how are 2,000 enforcement agents supposed to cover 7 million businesses? Now, if you're wondering, well, there's no way they could do that. Oh, yeah, there is a way. That way is called, well, they call them whistleblowers. You might call them snitches or stool pigeons. Me, I call them the Stasi. So again, I'm old enough to remember the Cold War. I'm old enough to remember the East German Stasi. East Germany, a communist country, which, by the way, referred to itself as a democratic socialist republic, but it was a communist country, had a group of special police called the Stasi. And one of the things the Stasi were known for was for hiring informants. Well, hiring is the wrong word. Blackmailing informants. You know, they'd find somebody, they'd find something on them, and they'd say, listen, you can either go to prison or you can be our informant and basically work for us for the rest of your life. Is that really any different than OSHA saying they're just going to get people to inform on their employers? They want the workers to file complaints. Now, think about it this way. You're a worker. Now, maybe you think everybody should be vaccinated. You get your vaccine. But you see, not everybody has gotten the vaccine. You realize that means the vaccine doesn't work. See, if the vaccine worked, you wouldn't care how everybody else acted. The vaccine would keep you safe, but it doesn't. Data shows that it doesn't. But now you're going to have workers say, you know what? I don't like the way my employer is handling this, so I'm going to turn them in. And do you really think there are not going to be disgruntled employees that won't file malicious complaints? You know, maybe you're the lazy person on the shift, or you just don't get your work done. Your just work isn't very good, so the company decides to fire you. So you file a complaint with OSHA saying, "Hey, they didn't mandate vaccines properly." What happens when we, the American people, start turning on each other? What happens when you look around at work and you wonder, gee, I better not say anything because Joe might be an informant. Sally might be an informant. What happens when you live your life like they did in East Germany, assuming everybody around you was an informant? See, what I find very interesting is here you have the federal government, an agent of the federal government, planning to turn people into the enforcement arm, in the investigative arm of OSHA. Now, this is the same Biden administration that is suing Texas because Texas made its citizens, gave its citizens the authority to sue abortion providers for violating the law. Just goes to show, it's not about character. It's not about justice. It's not about the Constitution. It's about a political agenda. So even though the court has said, listen, OSHA, you can't do this. Even though OSHA has said, no, we're not going to enforce this. We already know they were planning to use, quote unquote, whistleblowers. They weren't able to investigate it on their own. They want the American people to turn in their neighbors for disagreeing with them, for not following an illegal regulation, an illegal law, a void law, an empty law, a meaningless law. They want the people to turn them in. They want to turn America into East Germany. And for those of you who are also old enough to remember, men and women willing to risk their lives, their children's lives, for the chance to get out of East Germany, who've seen pictures of people shot and killed for trying to cross no man's land, to get over the wall, under the wall, around the wall, to get to freedom. Is that really what we want to turn America into? See, that's the sausage. The unintended consequence, or maybe the intended consequence, of implementing this type of control, of having a lawless, reckless, unconstitutional administration. A man at the top, supported by men and women in his administration, to whom the Constitution is either an assistance to their agenda or a speed bump to get around. Ignore what the Constitution says. We'll just do what we want. It's just another reason why you and I, every American, needs to read and study the Constitution so we can look them in the eye and go, no, I don't care what your regulation says. It's void. I don't care what the court says. It's a violation of my rights. It's void. The Constitution is superior to anything your OSHA director says. The Constitution is superior to anything the president says. The Constitution is superior to anything the court says. I don't care. And I'm willing to suffer the consequences of standing up for what is right when the world around me says no. Are you willing to stand? And, you know, I keep hearing people saying, well, if we just all get vaccinated, everything will go back to normal. I don't believe you. You've lied to us so many times. There's no reason for me to, in fact, there's every reason for me to not believe you. So when I found this article that claims the U.S. plans to invest billions manufacturing COVID-19 vaccines. See, your government's going to take your money. Now, this is not investment. This is embezzlement. See, there's nothing in the Constitution. The Congress is only authorized to collect taxes to spend on three things. To pay the debts, to provide the common defense, and for the general welfare of the government of the United States. When it says general welfare of the United States, capital U, capital S, that is a proper noun for the union of states and its government. Not anything Congress thinks would be good for you. So they're going to tax money from you that they're not to spend on things they're not authorized to. That's called embezzlement. They're going to embezzle billions of dollars to expand vaccine manufacturing capabilities and to make billions of doses available per year. They want to be able to make 1 billion doses per year. You think they plan on this ever stopping? There are what, 330 million Americans roughly? That is 3 shots per American per year. That's the capacity they want to add. And they're going to take your money to do this. Do you really think this is ever going to end if we comply. See, that's the important part. It all comes down to compliance. Now, there are millions of Americans that are more than willing to simply roll over and comply. If that's what they want to do, that's what they do. I bumped into a couple of old acquaintances. I hadn't seen them in years. And it's interesting because they had both been vaccinated. But they said, listen, we talked to our doctor. We didn't get vaccinated because the president said so. We didn't get vaccinated because of Fauci said so. We didn't get vaccinated because the media said so. We went to our doctor. And based on our health and our situation, this was the proper move for them. Now, whether it is or not, time will tell. But they made a decision based on their medical situation in consultation with their doctor. That is their right. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the millions of Americans who, out of fear, are simply doing what they're told. The couple that got vaccines because the woman who's pregnant, their doctor told them, listen, if there's something, if something happens during delivery, if you're not vaccinated, you might have a hard time getting treated in the hospital. Are you kidding me? Any hospital that would refuse treatment of a mother in labor with a problem delivery for a vaccine that isn't going to keep anybody safe, that should be sued. That to me is borderline criminal. Now, again, they're human beings. They have a right to work where they want and with within whatever restrictions they can agree with their employer. But you see, we kept saying back when they pushed the Affordable Care Act that you're going to lose control of your life. If the government controls your health care, they control your life. Well, here's an example. Here's a couple, I've talked to them. The only reason they got the vaccine was they were scared, they were influenced into doing so out of fear that a hospital might turn them away or at least delay treatment if they didn't comply. I know people, they won't let someone in their house unless they've been vaccinated. I know businesses that are buckling, they're complying with illegal mandates and orders because they're either afraid or they don't know how to stand. See, that's the problem with the sausage. We never stop to think of what's the second and third order consequence of taking your doctor and making them an employee of a hospital because they can't afford to keep up with all the insurance forms. They can't afford to maintain a private practice. So they get bought up by a conglomerate, by a clinic or a hospital. And now your medicine is corporate. I thank God that I have a doctor who still owns his own clinic. I see a doctor that isn't dealing with a corporate decision making. My wife, we're looking for a new neurologist because her neurologist won't see her anymore because she won't get the vaccine. Pay no attention to her medical history. She doesn't comply with a government edict. Therefore, he won't treat her. Do you know how hard it is in Middle Tennessee to find a doctor, a neurologist, that's not simply part of the Vanderbilt Corporation? Because every Vanderbilt place I've seen has that same mentality. Comply or don't get treated. So how long before this gets even worse? See, a patient in Texas earlier this month, although that's when the report came out, went to receive a monoclonal antibody treatment. Now, I'm not here to discuss the effectiveness or safety of monoclonal antibodies, but the Texas Health and Human Services Department said these were available treatment for COVID patients based on the FDA's emergency use authorization. Now, apparently, a host at InfoWars, host of the American Journal, found out that he tested positive for the coronavirus, the SARS-CoV-2. So he found out about this monoclonal antibody treatment during a medical visit, and he wanted to see if he could get it. Now, in the exchange with his healthcare worker, this was captured on video, and I'm going to quote from the story from the New American. He said, he was speaking, "If I were Black or Hispanic, then I'd be able to qualify." "Yep, that's right. I'm sorry, that's right. Yep," the worker responded. "I'm being denied medical service because of my race," Smith asked. "That's the criteria," she said. Well, apparently, an independent journalist phoned Texas's state infusion hotline to verify the policy, and he recorded the call. According to the report, the representative seemed a little hesitant, tried to obfuscate the matter, but ultimately acknowledged the truth. Quoting, "There's eligibility criteria that we go by," the rep stated. "And oh, African American and Hispanic are high-risk ethnicity groups, so that would be a qualifier." Reed later asked, "If you are a healthy, in-shape Caucasian and you show up, you are not going to get an infusion. Based on the criteria that we go by right now, that is correct." So for all of you who go, "Oh, Texas is wonderful, Texas is perfect," no. Here we have state policy denying treatment based on the race of the patient. I find that just as disgusting if it was a white man or a Black man, if it was a white woman or a Black woman. This is racism. I believe every person in the sound of my voice living in Texas should be on the phone to their state rep, their state senator, demanding this change. Black, white, brown, blue, green, orange, yellow, I don't care. If we are going to divide people based on race, then we are no different than apartheid South Africa. We're just changing games with the colors. This is the sausage making of racism. When anyone who voted against Obama did so because he was a racist or she was a racist, when the lieutenant governor-elect of a state is a white supremacist because she doesn't bow to a political standpoint, even though she's Black, that's the sausage. We have made this sausage. The question is, will we take control of the levers of power or not? You can find more about my show and get all the latest podcasts if you go to AmericaOutloud.com. Look under the menu. You'll find our shows or schedule. You'll find the Constitution Study, and you can be in the know.
Maybe you'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.